Welcome to Voices of Experience radio show and podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the Voices of Experience podcast wherever you find your favorite podcasts. No promotional fees have been paid to anyone appearing on Voices of Experience. Now, on with the show.
Welcome to Voices of Experience for Wednesday, April 17th. My name is Paul Casey, and I'm back in the studio here at Kixie, and it's great to be here. It's been about, 2.5 months?
Yeah, it has. You left for good weather, and you came back to good weather.
Well.
So welcome back to the sunshine.
Please.
And the beautiful views.
Tell me I had something to do with that.
You did. It's your.
Okay, so where's the cake? Welcome back cake. Is it what? Where is it?
Guys, oh, we got some donuts in the kitchen.
Donuts in the kitchen.
They were there when I left. God, that it. Okay, that's what I get.
Oh,
all right. I know you guys missed me, didn't you?
I feel bad.
Yeah, I mean, I know it somewhere. I know you've got it hidden.
During the break, I'll go get you some coffee and an old donut.
Okay, excellent.
3 months old?
Yeah.
It's nice to be wanted. It really feels good. So let's see. Let's get on with what we're going to be talking about today. And I got some really good interviews I've kind of saved for this show coming back. And the first one I have up in just a few moments is a gentleman by the name of Jim Murphy. And he's going to be talking about renewable energy and clean water. Now, the Clean Water Act, I think of about 1971 or two. It was in that era that it was passed, but the Supreme Court has weakened it considerably. And so I think if you are interested in clean water, you may want to listen to what he had to say. He does come on and said they did a survey, and they said 92% of the people want to drink clean water. And I'm going, what are the 8% who don't? I'm more interested in that. You know, when I hear those stats, I go, there's 8% of the people go, no, it really doesn't matter to me.
Give me the dirty water.
Yeah, please. I mean, that's the choice.
It's not like a martini, you know, martini dirty.
Right, right. No, it's a martini, that's different. But nonetheless, I was fascinated by that. He does mention that. But let's see, what else? He has something about investing in nature and kind of don't know exactly what that was before. But it's like there's a lot of wetlands and a lot of things that are in nature right now that if we use those better, I mean, it'll be a much better ultimate way of being able to preserve our water and make it cleaner and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk that in a few moments. He'll be much more articulate than me about that. And then second feature today, it'll be on the towards the end of the show, I talked to an Andrew Nelson, and he wrote a book for National Geographic, and it's called Here, Not There, 100 Unexpected Travel Destinations. He raised a term that I'd never heard before, and you guys tell me if you've heard this before. It's called Destination Dupe.
Destination Dupe. No, I have not heard that.
Okay.
Me either.
Well, let me define that because I did have to look it up even after I interviewed him. But essentially what it is, it means duplicates. It means that if you're going to take a trip to, let's say, and I'll talk about the specific one I'm going to refer to. Let's say you want to go to Athens and you want to go and visit the Acropolis and see all those sites there and you have that must vacation. Well, you just can't afford it because it's really expensive. Well, what this is about, you're not going to believe this. I had to look it up. There's an Parthenon, you're not going to believe it. Again, I said that a few times, in Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay.
So that's what he's talking about. And apparently it's in a park. It's beautifully, it's a replica of the exact dimensions of a lot of what you will see in Greece. So
This is like how they have the Eiffel Tower in Las Vegas.
Yes, I would say that would be it. That's a little different, but yeah, it's kind of the idea. For example, there's something, there's a Rhine River cruise in Germany, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
It'd be wonderful to go on. I don't know if anybody's been on that here.
No, I want to. That's on my bucket list for sure. I think that'd be cool.
Well, he says that the New York, there's something called the Thousand Islands, and it's very much like taking a river cruise on the St. Lawrence River as you would if you went to Germany. So you're getting the idea of that, and that's what he talks about. And there's like 100 unexpected travel destinations that you should consider in that arena. But I looked it up on Google. Yeah, and there's a term for it now called destination dupe, and it's duplicates. It's where you can go maybe that you can't afford to go to a destination of your choice right now.
And isn't there a replica of Stonehenge down on the Columbia, above the Columbia on the Washington side? I'll look that up.
Okay. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, you can actually see it from, I think it's around the Hood River area, right there along the Columbia River.
Okay. Well, look that out. Maybe we can find that out when we take a break. But that's the idea.
Maybe we got some druids in Walla Walla I never heard about.
All right. So now you guys have caught on. All right.
Gotcha.
So there's that, and that will be coming up again towards the end of the show today. Meandering Musings with Neil Peterson. Today is You Will Never Know Who You Will Run Into. And there was somebody who's famous, who we ran into, I think, in a store. And I'm going to give you one of three people it was, and you can guess or think about it before we air this. Leonardo DiCaprio, was it him? Was it Ted Danson? Or was it Russell Wilson? It's one of those three.
Okay.
So think about that. We'll be finding that out just a few moments when we play Meandering Musings again with Neil Peterson. Voices of History for today. An iconic American car was introduced on this day in 1964. Anybody have an idea what that would be?
I have it.
I've got a guess.
I've got it.
All right. Why don't we hold on to that, and then you can tell me what it is when we get there. Because, Eric, you're good at cars, and both of you guys are. I would have known because I'll tell you why, but it wasn't. Anyhow, I'll move on.
And I have a story that goes along with it, but go ahead.
You do? Okay. And let's see. Timeless classic for today. This song came from a movie that was provided mixed reviews by the critics, but ended up grossing over $434 million. It's from 2017. That's the movie, and you'll hear a song selected from that movie. It was a musical. But still, this was one that really stood out, I think. It was a great song. So that's going to be on the Timeless Classic today. Not enough to go on that one. That's kind of a stretch.
That's kind of half the fun, though.
Sure.
Trying to figure it out. Eric probably has it.
I've got an idea.
He's got an idea. See,
all right. Good enough. And let's see. What else? Solopreneur. That's talking about going into business for yourself. I wrote a book on this called The Self-Employment for You. And one of the things that I stressed in the book, in this section, is the ability to multitask, that you must be able to do that. So we'll be discussing that coming up in just a few moments. Now, Tacoma Rainiers, I'm going to give a few tickets away today.
Excellent.
And by the way, they are in first place, and probably people know, but not everybody knows, is that Kixie is carrying the games now, which is great. And the feedback so far from the Tacoma Rainiers and from the station here has been very positive.
Absolutely.
So we're really looking forward to continuing that going forth. But anyhow, the Tacoma Rainiers, I have two tickets. They're box seat tickets right behind home plate. It would be for this Sunday, April 28th at 1:35 p.m. Included in that would be complimentary parking and a brunch, complimentary brunch and beverages. And it's supposed to be a beautiful day, I think. Does it last till Sunday?
I think,
Eric?
It is supposed to be pretty nice, actually.
Yeah. So if it's not, it's pretty close to undercover, and you can always run into the clubhouse and duck the rain if it does rain. But hopefully it doesn't. And, a lot of the – I don't think I have to stress this maybe so much, but sometimes you – talk about things and you assume people know this, but the Tacoma Rainiers are the AAA team to the Seattle Mariners.
Yes.
And you see some of the stars that are making on the roster now that you see come through Tacoma. I saw Jonathan Clase play when I was down there about a week ago. Now he's playing for the Seattle Mariners. So The other thing, you're right behind home plate in the first row. So that number, why don't you give it, Eric?
Yeah, so what you want to do is dial 425-653-1166. That's 425-653-1166. The first caller to that number that gives us their name and their phone number and address, you know, old and stale mail address, will get you information on these tickets. 425-653-1166. You know, Paul, right before you'd mentioned that, we were talking about the travel section or the travel portion of today's program, and there is a full scale replica of Stonehenge, and it's in Washington. It's in Klickitat County, which is down there in sort of southern Washington, at the Maryhill town site. So just go ahead and Google it. It's fascinating. I won't go into great detail, but just as you were saying, here in the state of Washington, an exact size replica of Stonehenge.
Wow, amazing.
You don't have to go to England.
Right. There you go. I don't think English people are very happy with us right now. The travel industry, it's going to dive there. Everybody's going to be coming to Washington now.
Everybody's flooding,
yes.
Flying into Portland right now.
Maryhill Stonehenge Memorial.
Yeah.
Wow.
Never heard of that.
I'm going to check this out. This is so cool.
It's a road trip.
There you go.
Road trip for sure.
Maybe we'll do a show there someday. We'll
be in what would happen? The stars would align. Spaceships come down.
Well, let's move it along then. That's I think I got it all in the opening. So anyhow, that's 425-653-1166 for those two Tacoma Rainiers tickets. Everybody who's gone so far this year has had a fabulous time. So let's get on that now. All right, so we'll return in just a moment with my first talk with our interview with Jim Murphy. All right, so Jim is the Director of Legal Advocacy for the National Wildlife Federation, where he coordinates legal advocacy with a focus on renewable energy and clean water. So let's get with my interview with Jim Murphy. Jim, what is the significance of World Water Day?
World Water Day is an opportunity to recognize that the importance of waters for health and safety. Wetlands in particular are the Brita filter of nature, as are small streams. And right now, these waters are at risk. A 2003 Supreme Court decision rolled back longstanding Clean Water Act protections for more than half of America's wetlands. Countless stream miles.
And we're seeing the effects of that now.
We are definitely seeing the effects of that. Across the country, waters that had been protected from unregulated dumping or from being paved over are now at risk of being polluted or destroyed. And what we can do about it? Well, as a recent poll from the Walton Family Foundation showed, pretty much all Americans support clean water. So what we need to do is we need to translate that support for clean water and that need for clean water into policies at all levels of government. Congress needs to restore the protections that the Supreme Court rolled back. But at the state and local level, we need protections that are in place to be strengthened. And in many places, we need state and local level protections to be put in place where they're lacking.
Something called the natural climate solution. What is that?
So a natural climate solution is basically investing in nature to mitigate and the impacts of the severe storms we're seeing, the intense rainfall, the longer droughts, the bigger and more intense heat waves. It's investing in those natural systems by protecting what's there and restoring, enhancing, and sometimes, you know, creating wetlands and other structures where they didn't exist before. So it's letting nature do what nature does best, and that's protect us from some of the most severe impacts of climate change.
Now, I read something, there are changes being considered to the Clean Water Act. It doesn't sound like that's positive changes.
Yes, right now there is a bill before Congress that would further roll back protections. It would make it much easier for polluters to pollute, and it would make it harder for communities to stand up and protect themselves. The National Wildlife Federation is opposing this bill. We hope it does not make it through the Senate. But unfortunately, while our waters are in crisis, there are members of Congress right now that are trying to do the bidding of big industry and big development and actually make our protections weaker.
Such a shame. When we look at our waterways now, when we go back like 50 years ago, is there some optimism that our waterways are somewhat better than they used to be because of the Clean Water Act and many of the environmental movements of the 1960s and 70s? Is there some good news on the horizon here?
The Clean Water Act is one of the most successful statutes that's been passed, I think, certainly in the history of conservation. In the late 60s and early 70s, our waters were in terrible shape. The Cuyahoga River was on fire. On the West Coast, we had the Santa Barbara oil spill. Lake Erie was effectively dead. Penobscot River in Maine was peeling paint off buildings. Fortunately, a lot of people still aren't around who remember those days and what serious bad condition our waters were in. And I think one of the reasons that water protections right now are being weakened is because people don't remember how successful the Clean Water Act is and have taken those protections for granted. But if we don't act soon to restore these protections, we're going to risk those type of pollution problems and public health problems again.
I remember growing up in the 1960s in Bellevue, and we have Lake Washington, and I remember signs saying, just don't jump into this lake because it's so polluted. And we never swam in it. But then we built secondary treatment plants actually ahead of the country, and Lake Washington is a pristine lake now, and I do remember that. And it's a real shame to hear all the progress that's been made, and it's so difficult to watch things get rolled back, and that's really hard to fathom. A very common term now is atmospheric rivers, and that's heavy rain coming in the West Coast. Is there any way of capturing this rain, this water, or some way? Is that even being contemplated?
Well, wetlands are actually one of the best systems for capturing water, both from severe rain events and also from snowmelt. The storage capacity of wetlands is amazing. An acre of wetland can store up to 1 million gallons of water. So when we have a lot of well-functioning wetlands on the landscape, they naturally store water. So the more wetlands we can protect and the more wetlands we can restore, the more water we're going to capture on the landscape and the less flooding we're going to have. And that's not just protection in times of flooding. It's also protection in times of drought because that water just doesn't wash away quickly. It stays on the landscape and is there to slowly seep back into rivers and streams and aquifers when we have some of the hotter, drier spells that climate change is also bringing.
So what can I do as a citizen to try to get the focus on clean water, essentially?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is demanding that this broad support, and again, 90% of Americans, according to the Walton Family Foundation Morning Consult poll, support clean water. So making sure that our policymakers at all levels of government listen to the people and not the polluters.
All right, so there we have it. Again, it was 90% of the people in America support clean water. Amazing that 10% oppose it. Anyhow, that was Jim Murphy. He is the Director of Legal Advocacy for the National Wildlife Federation. And again, he coordinates legal advocacy with a focus on renewable energy and clean water. Back with Meandering Musings in just a moment.
You never know whom you'll run into at the grocery store. You never know whom you're going to see or run into when you're doing the most mundane of activities. This past summer was an excellent example of that. Let me set the stage for you. At about midday, I was shopping for food in the local Stop and Shop grocery store. It is the only grocery store in Edgartown, Massachusetts, on Martha's Vineyard. I had been given a grocery list of what to get. It included Worcestershire sauce, fresh basil, eggplant, whole milk, heavy cream, eggs, marinara sauce, mozzarella balls of cheese, sour cream, and panko breadcrumbs. I had ridden to the market on my bike, hoping to be able to fit all of these items into the basket. As I'm looking for eggplant, I notice a man with white hair shopping right next to me. I say to myself, boy, he looks like Ted Danson. but I keep searching for the items on my list. I was not sure that it was he, but the resemblance was uncanny. A few minutes later, I see him again as we're both rummaging around in the vegetable and fruit section of the store. This time, I said to myself, that has to be Ted Danson. So what do? I call out to him saying, Ted Danson. The man responds to me by saying, yes. And then I stick out my hand and say, I'm Neil Peterson. And we shake hands. What then, you may ask? I then proceed to say to him, my favorite television show of all time was Cheers. And I just want to thank you for the role you played in that show. Thank you so much. Ted responded by saying thank you back to me. I could tell that he wasn't put off by my calling him out. I could tell that he was comfortable in his own skin. He was casual, warm, and friendly. It was a nice exchange. A little later, I was going for the checkout line when I realized that Ted Danson was going for the same checkout line. So I gestured to him with my left arm, asking him to go first, and added verbally, after you. Once again, he smiled and thanked me again. While he was unloading his items onto the conveyor belt for checkout, we strike up another conversation. This time it was about the vineyard, whether he was a regular here or just visiting. He told me that he comes here all the time and he'll be staying until August 1st this past summer because he had to leave for some work at that time. I tell him about my family's history on Chappaquiddick and how I now bring my kids and grandchildren here for 2 weeks in late June every year. He says that the vineyard is something special, and we both agree. I know it may sound corny, but it just thrilled me to meet and talk with Ted Danson, as brief as the encounter was. I got the sense that he was a nice human being. And it gave me the opportunity to express gratitude to him for the joy that he's brought into my life. Since this happened, I've done some research on Ted Danson, and I've learned quite a bit. At 75 years of age, he has a long and distinguished acting career that includes much more than Cheers. However, Cheers is what put Ted Danson on the map. Playing Sam Malone, the bartender owner of the bar Cheers in Boston, he won 2 Emmys and 2 Golden Globes. The show ran for 11 seasons and 275 episodes and was ranked by TV Guide as the 18th most popular TV show of all time. It finally stopped running because Ted wanted to do other acting roles. And he surely has done that. He's acted in 31 movies over the last 40 years. He's been nominated for over 42 awards, and he's won 7. In television alone, over the last 50 years, he's appeared in 60 series, films, or shows, Cheers being just one. More recently, he starred in The Good Place and Mr. Mayor. He's been married for almost 30 years to his current wife, Mary Steenburgen, an Oscar winner in her own right. He had 2 previous marriages and had a reported affair with Whoopi Goldberg years ago. Financially, he's successful with an estimated net worth of $80 million. He was paid $500,000 for each episode of Cheers, which ran for 11 seasons. He and his wife have a home on Martha's Vineyard, and he's very interested in the environment, especially ocean conservation. He has co-authored a book entitled Oceana, Our Endangered Oceans, and What We Can Do to Save Them. Apparently, he's still working. And as I found out, he goes to the grocery store to buy food, just like the rest of us.
Be sure to subscribe to Meandering Musings wherever you get your favorite podcasts. For more about Neil Peterson and to read more Meandering Musings and travel essays, visit meanderingmusings.net. Like the podcast? Please help us grow our listenership. Tell your friends about Meandering Musings and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
All right, that interesting encounter with Ted Danson. It got me thinking when I heard this, people I've met that are famous, I guess, in television, sports, politics, maybe. And I've met my share of them. But the only thing I'm going to say about it, I'm not going to name any names, but I'm going to say by and large, the people that I have met have been what Neil described as his experience with Ted Danson. They're very down to earth, very friendly. And all I'm going to say is the experiences have been very good, the exception maybe of two or three. And that's been about it. So
you're not going to name names, though?
No, I don't. Yeah. No, I wouldn't. Why would I do that? But I'm just going to say that it has, the encounters have always been very quite positive, except very, very rare. Yeah. When it's happened. How about you?
Yeah, I've had the good luck, I think, to meet a few different celebrities that I admired over the years. And you know what always strikes me is you have maybe in your head like an idea of maybe how tall they were without even thinking about it, like a subconscious kind of thought of they're about your height is what I typically think. And then when you meet famous people and they're much shorter than you or much taller than you, it's always striking to me and kind of surprising. But overall, the experience of meeting, these various actors has been fantastic. So,
yeah. So, I just for an observation, it's pretty cool. They're not so detached or, you know, that you think they may be. They're very gracious for the most part.
Anybody in particular that you met that you was really excited to meet and they didn't let you down?
Well, let me come up with one, because actually you triggered something when I hadn't thought about it for a while, and that is Robert Redford.
Oh, wow.
I got to meet him at Washington State University. He got an accolade there. He was starting an environmental school there, and he came and spoke, and we waited till afterwards. But when you said about him being short or the people you've met, he was to me, when he walked in, he is not tall. He's like 5'7". I was really surprised how short he was. Again, right. You see him in the movies. That surprised me. But again, he was incredibly gracious, very nice to meet, and very appreciative of us taking our time. He made you feel really good about the recognition you gave him. So
cool.
I will say.
Yeah.
I wasn't even thinking about him until you brought the size up.
Yeah. It's just one of those things that I've noticed, like that I think, oh, wow, they're much taller than I thought.
Or, right.
Oh, wow, they're much shorter than I thought. You just, because the way that they frame everything in TV and movies, everybody appears to be about the same height. So you don't really have a good gauge, I think, on, you know, people's height.
Right.
Not that it makes a difference one way or another. It's just one of those things that, to me, stands out.
Yeah, why
out,
you don't like people who are short? Is that what you're saying,
Short
Eric?
People got no reason to live, right?
Hey, I'm kind
of
short.
We just lost a lot of our audience. Don't write in.
I think that was Randy Newman.
Yeah. I remember that song.
Right. Well, that's good. All right, we'll move on then to Voices of History.
Welcome to today's Voices of History.
Tonight, we proved once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from the might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda.
All right, there we go. Boy, I feel really my pulse getting faster when I hear President Obama speak again. But I'll leave it at that. So let's go into Voices of History today, April 17th. We'll start in 1961. And that's the Bay of Pigs invasion began with a group of Cuban exiles backed by our CIA when they attempted to overthrow the Cuban government led by Fidel Castro. The invasion, I'm reading from the script, failed. I would say, having known a little bit about it, read it, it was a disaster.
Right, it was a disaster.
Terrible turn of events, and eventually probably led to the Cuban Missile Crisis a year later. That was not settled at that point. But that happened today, the Bay of Pigs invasion, and backed by the CIA. So that was on this day, 1964, okay, this is the car I was talking about at the beginning. I won't say it. What do you think the car was?
Ford Mustang.
That's what I was thinking, too. Ford Mustang. Yeah.
Wrong. It was a Chevy.
Oh. Chevy Malibu.
I got you both.
Yeah. No, but what was it?
It was a Ford Mustang. I just am still not over not getting a cake when I came back. So
yeah,
I wanted to give that back to you. Yes, it was the Ford Mustang, the iconic American car, which was officially introduced to the public by the Ford Motor Company. I didn't know this at the New York World's Fair.
Yeah, and it was followed, I believe, shortly by the Chicago Auto Show. So my father-in-law ordered one, a 1964 and a half Ford Mustang, canary yellow, black interior, black top convertible.
Ooh.
He ordered it. That was the one they had on display, and it was from a local dealership, and it was became so popular that they weren't willing to sell it for him for what he had signed at the event, at the amount, right?
And what do you think the amount was?
I believe it was around $2,650, something like that.
Right.
Because he had he still has
$2,650.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Please continue.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, not
$2,650. Yeah, is that $26,000? No.
Correct. No,
$2,650.
Yeah, and he goes to the dealer and demands his vehicle. He says, look, you know, he threatens a lawsuit. I've got an attorney. This whole thing, finally release it, but he had to pay an extra $500 or something.
Wow.
He was pulled over twice from the dealership home because the cops just wanted to see it. They'd never seen one before.
Oh.
Isn't that amazing?
That
get pulled over
incredible.
Just to look at your car.
Do you have a Mustang story?
I don't. That's a pretty cool story, though.
Well, I do because we got a 65 Mustang, and it was dark blue, white top.
Nice.
Beautiful car, four on the floor.
Yeah.
I learned to drive on that car. Four on the floor.
You were the man in high school.
Oh, man, driving around. One time at Lots, it's muffler, and I was really driving around being cool. But, nothing like that story. But that was, to me, that's my favorite car of all times. It was something that
so groundbreaking.
Because I'm not a real car person, but that car I really still look at, sleek and beautiful.
Those 60s models are really cool looking, and I don't know why they don't just bring back that body and, you know, update, you know, the engine and all that stuff with modern technology, but keep the very striking look because it's a cool car.
Absolutely. I believe that Dodge is coming out with an electrified, what would have been called a pony car.
Okay.
So they're going to make it look kind of retro, but it's going to be electric.
Cool.
That's great.
I'd be interested in that.
In 1970, on this day, Apollo 13, the third mission intended to land on the moon, returned safely to Earth after an oxygen tank exploded aboard, jeopardizing the mission. They all came back safely, the astronauts, and there was a movie about this mission made in 1995. It was called Apollo 13. Director Ron Howard, stars Tom Hanks, the late Bill Paxton, Kevin Bacon, and Ed Harris. It makes me want to see that movie again. That was a fabulous movie. I only think I've seen it once.
But, great movie.
I remember when it happened. I don't know if you guys remember, but I remember, that's a shame and whatever. I didn't really pay much attention to it, but I didn't know how serious it was until I saw that movie. I went, my God.
Then it sort of circles back to the whole car thing because the superstars back then were these early astronauts. Remember that they were big news.
Oh,
so GM got the idea. Let's give them Corvettes.
Really?
And they started filming them in photos with the astronauts in Corvettes, and then everybody wanted a Corvette Stingrays.
Well, by the way, just to let you know that we did receive a couple calls. We do have a winner for the Tacoma Rainiers tickets on this coming Sunday. So we'll get to those people, let them know, and the person who won. And we'll do this again, but glad that people, I think they'll really enjoy the experience. I know the woman that, I got to have her back on. I can't remember her name right now, but she had a ball when she was down there. I'm going to get a recording of the time that she was there
a
few weeks ago. So I'll just keep it on. We don't have to take a break here. I'm thinking about, we got some information, maybe for discussion purposes. And that is, I get this from Global English Editing, and it
I think it's just promoting its services, but it has advice on in terms of certain things that we should think about. And for example, I'll just get to it. If you want to be respected as you get older, and I think this goes for anybody, say goodbye to these 8 people-pleasing behaviors. Okay, I'm just going to say them, comment on them, you guys, if you want. First of all, constantly saying yes. There's an old saying that there is no complete sentence. There's an old saying that no is a complete sentence. As we age, it becomes crucial to understand the power of saying no. Okay?
I like that.
Number 2, always seeking validation from other people. Get away from that. Number 3, over-apologizing. Just like you guys have apologized for me for not having the cake. I don't let things go. That's number 5. Let it go.
I mean, you did ask if there was a cake, and we said no.
Yeah.
Right.
Or if you want to really make someone mad, apologize in that way. I'm sorry you feel that way.
Right. You know, I'm sorry if you were offended by us not having the cake for you, but.
Do you want to do this, guys? God, that doesn't
No.
No. Nice. Oh, I brought it all around.
Oh, this is good. I better keep rolling through this. I'm getting slaughtered here. All right. Suppressing your true self. Authenticity. Hmm. That's what I think is very important. Always being agreeable. Yeah. People do that. They kind of irritate me at times going, hey, you know, pop in there. Do you really keep shaking your head? Yeah. Well, you got to have a brain. You got to have some other opinion there.
Yeah, right.
Goes along with this, number 6, avoiding conflict at all cost. Yeah, it's nice to, again, I have people I know in the circle who have different views, and I may say something, but they will sit there and nod their head and go, hey, help me out here.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure.
Not to get in a big argument, but they just don't, oh, I don't want to rock the boat.
Right.
Okay, I get it, but sometimes you got to step up there. And then you're always putting other people first, not yourself. Maybe I want to revisit that a couple times too. And then number 8 was overcommitting.
I'm guilty of most of that stuff at some point in my life, you know. And I hear what you're saying. My wife and I had this conversation. We got north of 50. We said, you know what? We no longer want to be around people who we don't love and don't respect, and vice versa. They don't love and respect us. We're done with them. You know, they're just peripheral people in your life.
Interesting. Interesting. So what did you think of that little tidbits or whatever of advice? There's more of this I can do in the future if you think it's worth it.
I like it. It's food for thought.
Yeah, that's all it is. That's what I think.
Probably important to say you still got to be polite with all that stuff.
Of course.
Because, you know, if you're just a curmudgeon that says no to everything.
Right.
And instead of avoiding trouble, you actively seek it out. You know, that's not any better.
But that solves a lot of problems because you have no friends to offend.
Well, there
you go.
You
have no friends you have to side with.
Right.
Say no to, what is that movie, Say Yes to Everything or whatever with Jim Carrey? That was a great movie.
Yes.
The consequences of just saying yes all the time.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess you do a reverse, the no.
You know what I'd like to do is get to my interview with Jim or Andrew Nelson, just a moment. So we'll take a little break here and then we'll come back with the interview I had. And I'll do an introduction to him in just a second. All right. Award-winning writer and editor for National Geographic Traveler, Andrew Nelson is with me, and actually I recorded this interview about a week ago. He has been in all 50 states as well as numerous countries for the magazine and the website. He has served as director of the editorial projects for National Geographic Travel. So quite a guy. We talked about it earlier. His book is called Here, Not There, 100 Unexpected Travel Destinations. Why did you become a travel writer?
I credit that to my parents, who were always people who encouraged me to see what was around the corner and over the mountain. Curiosity was the primary driver of a travel writer, I think. You want to really see places and experience cultures and talk to people that are different than you and different than the place you grew up.
There's something defined as dupes on TikTok. I didn't know anything about that and how this relates to the term travel dupes. Could you describe what a travel dupe is?
They're called destination dupes to get that alliteration in, I think. But basically, these are suggestions of alternative travel destinations to a place that might be more iconic or more crowded or more expensive, which is exactly the thing I'm tackling in my book, which I like the title of Better Here, Not There.
Okay, so let's say we're not talking about travel for a moment. This may be a bad analogy, but it would be like not going to the Nordstrom store, per se. It would be like going to the Nordstrom Rack.
An interesting way of putting it, but I understand what you mean, because Nordstrom has quality. These places contain the essence of the place that they're replacing, but they're different. They're not as crowded. They may not be as expensive. Or they may be shedding light on an overlooked neighborhood in a city that is always very crowded, like Los Angeles.
I read about one of your examples, like an excursion through New York's Thousand Islands instead of a cruise down Germany's Rhine River. That would be an example, correct?
Correct. It is not the Rhine River, but it does have castles on the river itself, on the St. Lawrence.
You know, I'm very familiar with New York, but I've never heard of Thousand Islands. Where and what is that?
The Thousand Islands are located on the border of Canada and New York State, so they're above the Adirondacks. Another area that people don't know too much about on the west coast of the United States, but they are part of the St. Lawrence River, and that's the river that drains the Great Lakes.
Are there more examples of this? I know you've got them in your book. You have a fabulous book. It's in color. It's amazing. It's just like in the high standards that National Geographic has. It's just all laid out there. So what other examples are there as far as these type of trips? I saw one that let's say, for example, go leaf peeping in West Virginia as an alternative to going through the state of Massachusetts and New England during the fall.
That's correct. That is correct. That's because the leaf peepers have become quite numerous in northern New England, and that's the iconic destination. But there are other places on the eastern seaboard where the autumn colors are just as vivid. One of those is in West Virginia. So that's a place you might want to explore. If you don't want to go with a lot of other people or a lot of other bus tours, try visiting West Virginia. It's an often overlooked state, but a beautiful state. Another dupe might be something. Here's something that's fun. I think you're familiar with the Acropolis in Athens, Greece. Would you be?
Oh, absolutely.
Right. We've all heard of it, but there's an exact replica down to the exact square inch of the Parthenon sitting in a park, Centennial Park, in Nashville, Tennessee. It is an exact replica, and inside is a 42-foot-tall golden statue of the Greek goddess Athena, the goddess of wisdom. The sculptor actually modeled her smile after another famous Nashvillean, Elvis Presley. So it's the Music City after all. So that's another example of a dupe nobody would expect.
Now, when did you start percolating this idea of doing the dupes for travel?
Well, this came after COVID, where we all suffered from a collective attack of FOMO, fear of missing out. And it seemed every iconic destination you go to, from Rome's Colosseum to the Empire State Building to Central Park to the Great Smoky Mountains, was just jammed with people. And once you finally got inside these places, you were surprised to find that you thought you were paying Myrtle Beach prices, but it's become Monaco. These were the types of things where they were more crowded, more expensive. And thirdly, because we at National Geographic take over tourism very seriously, I thought if I could redirect Americans to less visited places that contain some of the same attributes as the more crowded ones, why both the planet and my readers could win. So a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, fabulous concept. Before we go, what are your favorites?
Oh, okay. Well, I will tell you, one of my favorite places is Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore in Michigan, in the upper part of the lower peninsula, looking across towards Wisconsin on Lake Michigan. It's just miles of sand dunes and fields and lovely lakeshore beaches. And I suggest that you go there instead of perhaps Cape Cod, because it has that same sort of New England-y feel.
All right, so we thank Andrew Nelson for that interview. If you would like to get a copy of his book, all you need to do is Google Here, Not There, Andrew Nelson. Here, Not There, Andrew Nelson. So we are coming up in the final minutes for the show today, and wanted to discuss a little bit about entrepreneurship. I call it solopreneurship because this is kind of going into business for yourself in the beginning, and it's just you. Doesn't mean it's you're the only person doing it. You have contract workers, you have help, but you don't have any other employees per se.
Right.
That's kind of what I did throughout my career. However, as I said, I've had a lot of contract workers and a lot of help. So to say it's solo, it's misleading because I've had a lot of help from many, many people. And just because I took this path doesn't mean that you should or even consider it. Maybe you want to build a business, whether you have a lot of employees. I don't talk about that because I'm saying Voices of Experience is the focus of this show, and I didn't do that. So I don't know what that is like to actually build it that way.
I see.
So I stick with what I believe I can help people focus and how they can do it. And if they want to grow larger, go for it and go in that direction. But one thing I just wanted to talk about today is really multitasking and really looking at the type of business you want to go into. But I think it's developing the mindset that what I say here is like, just because you're a great artist, that doesn't mean you can sell your artwork. I want to be an artist. And just because you like really good steak doesn't mean you can run a steakhouse.
Okay? Right. Right.
And I think a lot of people go in with that. Follow your passion and the money will follow. You hear me say that all the time. No, that is the worst advice anybody's ever given. You know, if you decide, let's say, to open up a restaurant, that's what you want to do. And that's your passion. That's great. But you have to be competent in many different arenas like finance, marketing, hiring people, managing people, organizational skills. You have to look at the sales, the execution, problem solving.
Yes.
There's a lot of things to consider, and being accountable, and of course, being very pragmatic. Those are things you have to look at if you're going to make it over the long haul. And I'm submitting the qualities, you have to look at those into implementing those. You can do almost any business if you have those. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, it really does. I bet it would be helpful, too, to write these things down. What are your strengths?
Well, that's the quiz.
Yeah.
When I do the quiz, self-employment quiz, and the 20 questions on there is like you take the quiz and then you rank yourself how strong you are on that, and multitasking is one of them. So if you're good at multitasking, give yourself a higher grade. And then you add it up and you find out, then I try to put a thing where you score like 130. Your prospects for success are higher. That's the whole point of the quiz.
And that quiz, just so you know, can be found on Paul Casey's website, voicesofexperience.com. That's voicesofexperience.com. Check it out and also look into his books, The Self-Employment for You and Pre-Flight Checklist. So you really not only walk the talk, you write the talk. You've written books about this.
Right. And I think I wrote the first one in 2004, and it was called Self-Employment for You. But I had to do another one in 2017 because what happened between then and, let's say, 2017 and 18, something called the iPhone technology just kicked in. And you look at the 2004 book, it's stuff that I talk about here, but the world's a different place. Now with AI going, it's going to another level, and maybe I'll have to do draft 3 or something to bring that into focus there.
That's the first time I heard the term multitasking was mid-90s when personal computers to the laptop size were really starting to become popular, and I was realizing I could do more work. Well, that also meant more responsibility. Right. So suddenly I was doing things that I never did before because now I had time to. And so it was almost like piling more and more on, but my end customer still expected that same service and response.
Right.
So even though I was a little more overloaded with work, I had to multitask to keep the same level of service to my client.
Outstanding. You do a great job.
Thank you.
All right. So I think with that, we're going to have to wrap this up here. And so that's all the time we have now. Let's see. We air again on Wednesdays at 3 o'clock p.m. You probably know that. Simulcast with Hubbard's sister station, KKNW, 1150 a.m. Probably know that too now, but it is rebroadcast on Sundays at 11 a.m. And of course, if you would like to hear this show or all the other shows that we've been doing for the last several years, all you need to do is Google Voices of Experience. And now I think in all of the various trends that are set up for this is that when you do that, Voices of Experience will be the first one up there and it'll say Voice of Experience Podcast. You'll just be able to click onto that and hear them all. Let's see, what else? Okay, thank you, Neil Peterson today, Eric Crema, Eric Ryder, and Benny Mathers for helping pull the show together. Quote of the week, life is what happens when you are busy making other plans. John Lennon. So with that, Timeless Classic is coming up next, only on Kixie, not on KKNW, well, partial on KKNW, but not on the podcast because of licensing issues. Have a great rest of the week.